Oh my God, it's been so long. How do we do this?
I know, I missed it. I love it. This is the highlight of my life. It's To Buy or Boycott, and I'm Allison.
And I'm Bridget. This week, we're talking about Instagram. How much time do you spend scrolling through photos each week? Do you post often? Do you care about likes and new followers? Is it getting more popular and relevant or less? Let's talk about it.
As always, we're here to help you sort through the jungle of apps on your phone, brands in your feed, so your time is spent supporting companies that align with your values. It can be that simple. Join the conversation and see updates on past topics on Twitter at To Buy or Boycott, or email us your suggestions at tobuyorboycott@gmail.com.
I have such a love-hate relationship with Instagram. It is one of those apps that I check very, very frequently, but I oscillate between feeling inspired and connected by it and feeling isolated and filled with that angsty ache of social comparison.
It is consistently the most used app on my phone. I didn't really need the screen time, you know, reminder of that, but it's this constant scroll. It never ends. And for true diehard B.O.B. fans, they'll remember our early conversations about my desire to delete Instagram, but worry about what was going to fill the void. So I deleted Instagram. I listened. I downloaded Twitter. I was happy. For a little bit. You know, I found the conversation on Twitter very lively. It was like engaging. I felt like smart people were giving me their hot takes all the time. But there were just like little nudges that kept pushing me to Instagram. Did you know that you can access a terrible web version of Instagram from any browser, including your phone?
Oh, God.
And you can't send messages, comments properly, really do any of the engaging part of Instagram. You can just look at the pictures. And it's a horrible user experience, which confirmed I'm addicted. And I don't know how you do it because you post regularly. You seem, you know, happy. You know, how do you do it? How do you manage your intake? You're so good.
I guess I'm glad it comes off that way. As I said at the top, like I struggle with it, but I think the one thing that has helped me with Instagram and Twitter is deciding on one community that I want to engage with. So I act more like a brand than a person. On Instagram, I primarily follow runners and share posts about my own running. And on Twitter, I primarily follow and tweet about politics. So I like this approach because it enables me to make these platforms feel a lot smaller and intimate. I miss tons of really interesting non-running related content on Instagram, but I think I'm just unwilling, I guess, to spend the more time to find all of those little nuggets of content because you have to spend a lot of time then scrolling through a lot of things that don't matter or don't make you feel good to get to those great little pieces. So by focusing my Instagram intake on a specific community and personal interest, I'm able to contain who I interact with, why I interact with them, and what I share. And that feels better.
Communities are definitely what keep me engaged in Instagram, even when I'm not actively posting. And I need to know what the bloggers are cooking and what the interior designer's inspiration, you know, is. And I'm excited about shoppable Instagram because it may actually turn Instagram into something useful for product discovery and supporting small designers because, you know, you see so many great inspirational images on Instagram, but what if they were achievable and not just aspirational? So I just feel like I want to support the maker and not the merchant who was smart enough to be able to get it on Amazon first. So I think Instagram is maybe moving in the right direction for me.
So I love the idea of Instagram being a place where you can find and support small and upcoming designers, but that doesn't align with what Instagram's business model actually is. Instagram is an advertising platform and they want to keep big brands like Zara, Nike, and H&M happy, which is why they moved away from a chronological news feed to a proprietary formula that you and I have no idea how it works, that determines the order of the posts that you see in your news feed. That way, Instagram can make sure that you see the Zara knockoff of that crocheted bikini that the small Brazilian designer made because Zara spends big bucks advertising on the platform.
True. And I think that's currently how Instagram is operating and Facebook, just as, you know, the parent company is operating. But Instagram really just wants to be the new mall, a marketplace potentially to rival Amazon. And it doesn't really care what you're buying. And if they could establish a marketplace where all vendors could pay to play and all, you know, right now the shopping function is free to the influencers and brands who are beta testing it. But if everyone can pay a little bit of money or pay per SKU, which I wouldn't be surprised if they moved in that direction, you know, I see it as being something equitable where you can, you know, based on your interest, if you're somebody who's following celebrity fashion and you want the knockoffs of, yes, you'll be able to get the H&M version or the Zara version of the Zac Posen or Jill Sander, you know, dress. But if you're into small brands and you want to support, you know, local makers, I think you'll also be able to do that. You know, hopefully I see it moving in that direction. And, you know, the people that I know that work there think that that's the direction, but Facebook has kind of swerved many times and they're doing a lot of things really secretly. So who knows what they actually think. But yeah, it's really, this seems like the inevitable next step, because in tandem with that, The Atlantic was reporting that really the Instagram aesthetic is over. You know, people aren't taking as many perfect pictures in front of Instagram walls and of rainbow foods. They want, you know, individuality and authenticity. It's really, really driven by Gen Z, who's like such a cooler, kind of like more casual generation than millennials. Like, we wanted everything to be professional cameras with like perfect prop shots. And they're posting like a million of the same images and they don't care what their grid seat look like. And it's just like a much more casual approach to Instagram rather than thinking that it is your personal brand page. Influencer marketers are actually even telling big influencers, like, pretend to be more casual. Don't post like perfect beachscapes and like the perfectly manicured brunch shots and Instagram moments. Like, users are unfollowing accounts at higher rates with inauthentic and sponsored content than they are following micro influencers who focus on like quantity of content, literally just like posting all the time, stories, and creating conversations in their comments around like just text that they write in notes, like nothing visually engaging. It's really all about the words, which is kind of a throwback.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I do wonder, you know, if potentially we're going to go back to like blogging, like we've kind of been like, it's so visual and so minimal in words, you know, Twitter is microblogging, but it does feel like comments are getting longer and longer. Email. Yeah, if you haven't listened to our newsletter episode, go listen to that. I hope what you say about the Instagram aesthetic dying a little bit is true, but I do think that it's going to be just really, really hard to shake. I remember like the first time I heard about Facetune, which is an app that enables you to smooth wrinkles, make your teeth wider, even reshape your waist and legs so you can get that, you know, covetable thigh gap. And I had just this visceral reaction of dread and disillusionment. And giving everyone the ability to retouch and airbrush their images, it just erodes our sense of reality. No longer is it just celebrities and magazines that are photoshopped. Everyone is. And by giving everyone the exact same tools to use, we all are starting to judge our natural beauty in the same way and rely on exactly the same enhancements. And it feels like we're opting to mass produce our bodies and our environments. So, you know, you mentioned like restaurants, coffee shops, and even people's homes are these like Instagram-friendly, Instagram-optimized places. Coffee shops make artful lattes. They put up neon signs with things that say like, but coffee first. Hotels install mirrors with hashtag OOTD, which stands for outfit of the day, printed backwards at the top. So when you take a photo, it actually is facing the right direction. And I know tons of my friends who have designed places in their homes specifically to take Instagram selfies. So it's this weird thing where Instagram has completely changed our environment. Instead of being a place where we document the things that we see and do, we do and see things in order to create content for Instagram.
Absolutely. But I think it's oversaturated. It's just, it doesn't seem real or attainable anymore. And I think that the generation coming up behind us, you know, this 14 to 24 year old cohort sees through that. And they're like, my house is never going to look like that. You know, Instagram was aspirational and stylized version of real life, and it became a parody of itself. It was so unreal. And it's that Instagram versus reality meme that became so popular, but it also coincided with the being able to swipe the carousel of images, which just kind of like kept you in Instagram longer and like got you even further down rabbit holes, because now people were posting like their whole vacation rather than like the one perfect moment. But it did allow for people to, you know, stop caring about each individual image a little bit more. And I feel like we all understood the joke that Instagram wasn't real together, just like reality TV isn't real. But I'm concerned about, you know, the kids even younger than Gen Z, who they're more in between, like we're in the between the internet and iPhone era, they're in between the social media era. But these kids that are like young kids that I see every day, I worry about, you know, what that does to their self-identity development and self-esteem, because public health researchers have found that of all the social media networks, Instagram has the most negative effects on personal well-being and encourages just kids to feel lonely. And I thought that that's part of what social media was supposed to solve.
Yeah, right. It was supposed to solve that, but I think it's just made the problem even worse. I am so grateful that I was able to go through middle school and high school without Facebook, Instagram, or Snapchat, any of the real social media platforms. I read the same survey that you did, and you know, it's really, Instagram is the worst out of all of those. So out of YouTube, Snapchat, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram is the worst when it comes to sleep quality, increased bullying, poor body image, and FOMO. And so in the usage, you know, the more time you spend on it, the higher teens and young adults report feeling depressed and anxious. I do think it's really interesting that YouTube is the best social media platform when it comes to mental health and well-being. And I'm not sure if that's because it's harder to filter the crap out of yourself when it's a video, or if it's that YouTube has maybe just more space for people to be weird and to be themselves and to share a broad spectrum of content. But you know, maybe there's something about Instagram in the future moving more towards video.
And I think that YouTube has more positive content. So while maybe it also has as much like focused on aesthetic content, so much of it is tutorial. It's like, you can achieve this. Or like, if you're not feeling well, like here's somebody kind of talking you through the problem, versus like Instagram is so like micro moments. It's that constant scroll. It's just, and we think about YouTube as being the hate platform, you know, as like being the place where the most vitriol brews. But Instagram, as it moves away from its signature aesthetic and more into this, you know, everything app that's text-based and shopping-based, it becomes ripe for the right-wing hate speech that used to be relegated to Twitter and YouTube. It's not about having the best content anymore, or stylized image, you know, which was bad in its own right. But now you can get just as many likes with a text post that encourages, you know, troubling content and responses to be expressed in the comments that are racist, hateful, you know, anti-Semitic, anti-Islam. Like those communities are growing on Instagram because they don't have, you know, the technology to really be monitoring the comments in the same way they do with the images right now. And Instagram used to be about this superficial identity building, but it's so much more like insidious now, because images have a culture and meaning to niche groups that average users and algorithms miss. So like, we might even see things on our explore page that if it was seen by, you know, somebody in a different group, even if that's just Gen Z, we're looking at their stuff and we don't get it, like the visual language that they're talking to each other in. And these like right-wing extremists are talking to each other in a visual language that like we no longer understand and can't moderate.
I mean, all of these social media platforms, Instagram included, are just incredibly good at noticing what content you like and serving you up more of the same. It's when it works for good, it's incredibly powerful. So I'm reminded recently there was, after the shooting at a mosque, there was a dad who stood outside of his local mosque with a sign that said, like, I'm a Christian, but I'm here to support you. This is a safe space. I'll stand outside and protect you. And that image went viral on Instagram and led to a lot of other people thinking about and doing the same things. That's an incredibly powerful moment. That is what social media is really good at. These like little instances when someone does something that's extraordinary and it's really powerful and it leads to a larger movement or a larger conversation. But just as good as it is at serving up those moments of hope, and is just as good at, you know, finding people who want to go to those dark and hateful places and saying, here's more of that dark and hateful place, and here's a community that agrees with you. I just think that Instagram is really bad at dealing with it. Whatever tools they're using, what other algorithms, they're probably using natural language processing. It's all algorithms, and I do think that they're just not sophisticated, and they're not picking up on nuance that when you scroll through it, it's really easy to pick up on, but computers and AI are just not good at it. And so it feels like it's just there.
Even if you're using humans, the like level of nuance in visual language, like an image that means absolutely nothing, that is like so benign, can be just like incite so much hate in some people. It's really scary. But the publishers of the study that we both referenced, the Royal Society for Public Health, did outline some interesting ideas that, you know, they thought would change and make Instagram and all social media networks healthier for young users. And young users responded that they thought that this would be helpful. Pop-up warnings about excessive usage every login, like, you know, excessive usage of social media may lead to anxiety, depression, FOMO, loss of sleep, all of the horrible side effects, like smoking. Two, that algorithms detect those struggling with mental health issues, like we screen, you know, for terrorists and sexual content, and, you know, we try to screen for right-wing hate speech. And three, to flag images that have been digitally altered. To your point, like, where do you draw the line? Is that somebody who's just face tuning before they post their friends going to prom? Or is that like, you know, more nefarious and hard to see photoshopping?
Yeah. I mean, those sound like great, great places to start. You know, I think there's kind of mixed results or mixed feelings about a lot of those. Like, I don't know how much when we post the calorie content on menus, how much that changes behavior. When you see the images or the warnings on cigarette packages, how much that changes actually user behavior. And also, how often are you logging in? Like, my phone, I never log into Instagram, right? It's just like logged in permanently on my phone. But I do think that you know, there needs to be things that they can change, and it's exciting to hear proposals. I would love to see Instagram improve the way or their response to images that are flagged. I have had a terrible experience every time I've ever flagged, or almost every time I've ever flagged content on Instagram. The other week, I was actually looking at the hashtag WCW, Women Crush Wednesday, and it was so disgusting. Like, the top posts for that were almost all pornographic. And the people who post these images are sophisticated. They understand the way that Instagram looks at images. And so they had put filters over them so that it would be really hard for machine learning to pick up on what the underlying image was. But it, as a human just looking through, you're like, cool, naked woman with her legs spread. Awesome. And when I flagged them, like, Instagram gets back to me within 30 seconds and it's like, this doesn't violate our content. So it's very clear to me that they are not, when I flag something, there's no human looking at it. They're just running it back through whatever algorithm was there and saying, nope, this looks good to us.
That's so troubling. But maybe the only way to fight social media is with social media. I found an interesting quote by a Dr. Becky Insker. She's an honorary research fellow at the University of Cambridge. And she said, young people, for using social media and digital technologies as a tool to help with mental health makes sense for many reasons. Social media is a part of their daily lives, and so they care So care could be delivered in a lifestyle integrated self-managed approach. And this holistic perspective could integrate personal interests and activities, and it might help improve psychoeducation, increase self-awareness and mental health, and act as a preventative measure. Young people sometimes feel more comfortable talking about personal issues online. I think that's a compelling counterpoint to all of our fears, but I don't know. What's your final verdict?
So I'm a buy, but I think only if you can find a way to use Instagram or any social media in a way that really enhances your life.
I'm a boycott and full stop. You know, I want to practice what I preach and I want to get off the gram and, you know, I'm fine on Twitter. This isn't a conversation about that, but it's just like, I would boycott Instagram, but I can't. I'm working on it. It's got a hold on me. And that's what I think is, until it makes changes to kind of break the cycle that it knows, it's very self-aware that it knows it created. I don't trust it to have it's my best interest in mind.
So true. All right. So tune in next week for a conversation about AirPods. How many pairs have you lost? Are you listening to this podcast with AirPods right now? Have you ever forgotten to take them out of your ears? Or am I the only person that has literally gotten into the shower with them still in my ears? We need to talk about this. Follow us on Twitter at ToBuyOrBoycott.
And email us at ToBuyOrBoycott@gmail.com if you want to join the conversation or you have a topic suggestion.
Bye.
Or boycott.